Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know, guys, percentages I expect to go up. And it was good tonight to see guys take and make shots tonight.
Hawks head coach Nate McMillan. Time for us to get to our headlines here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth in place of Andy and Randy. Guys, will be back with you on Monday. Glad to keep you company here on this Black Friday. Hawks and Rockets, they tip it off tonight at 8 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Houston, they've lost 5 of their last 6. They've only won at home once this year. I mentioned this earlier. I thought it was really odd that, and maybe it happens more often than I think, but Garrett, are you with me here or am I alone in that it just feels odd in the NBA? Houston played Sunday and then they haven't played since. So they've been off from basically Sunday until today. I just don't feel like we see that in the NBA schedule this time of year, do we?
4 days is a long time.
It seems like it to me, yeah.
That's a long time. I don't care what time of year it is, even. I mean, unless you're in the playoffs or something. Not even then. It's like 2 days.
Right.
Like, you normally don't go that long. But it's just the fact that they had Thanksgiving built in, and it's just like one of the weird days of the year. It's like, I don't know, they get that extra day. Is that a big advantage for them? No.
I don't think so.
Not at this stage of the season. Maybe if we were playing in April.
Difference.
Or March.
Right. Yep.
Or something. Yep. Maybe then it would have been an advantage, but I don't think it's really an advantage at this point. I mean, you almost get out of rhythm, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's almost not good.
Yeah, for a team that really hadn't gotten in rhythm yet. So, Houston's bad. The Hawks should be able to pick up a win tonight on the road. They've been doing this win one, lose one thing long enough now, right? It's time to string a couple of these together. They hadn't won back-to-back games since November 5th and the 7th. So it's time to kind of change that going up against a Houston team. It's not very good. They are in total rebuild mode. I think it's too early in the year to get kind of like what Nate McMillan was saying there in the clip we played. It's a little too early in the year to get all worked up about the way the Hawks look right now. Offensively, I would have thought this offense would have, you know, little more juice to it right now than what we've seen. I mean, they're 11th in the NBA in scoring. They are rebounding well. They're 5th in the NBA in rebounds per game. They're taking care of the basketball, second fewest turnovers in the game. And the other thing is this team is really improved defensively from a year ago. We'll find out how much improved they are when Brad Rowland visits with us. Brad's the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast. We'll talk some Hawks with Brad coming up. We'll do that in about, we'll get to it here in about 15 or so minutes from right now. So stay with us here. All right, we've got Falcons and Commanders coming up on Sunday from D.C. That's a 1 o'clock tip-off. You can hear it here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Washington comes in 6-5. They've won 5 out of the last 6. Taylor Heinicke, he's taken over at quarterback. They've played really well. Grant Paulson from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. was with us last hour. And look, for all that Heinicke has done, which is basically not go in there and cost them games and allow the defense to do what they do, their defensive line has been really good. They forced 12 turnovers in the last 6 games, so they are plus plus seven in turnover ratio in the last six games. That's the best mark in the NBA, in the NFL, rather. And this is going to come down to kind of like what we talked about with Grant. It's going to come down with the Falcons' offensive line, which has been better run blocking than they have been pass blocking, going up against a Washington defense, and in particular defensive line. Those D tackles in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, those guys have been really, really good. There is a chance that we see Chase Young back on the field for the first time this year. Let's hear from Falcons head coach Arthur Smith on facing this Washington defensive line.
But when you're talking about Payne and Allen, I mean, they're hard to block. They play the run really well. They're powerful. They got good counter moves as they assault the pocket. Different ways they rush. See why both those guys were first round, you know, heavy investments for Washington. And you got Sweat playing out there, and they got a lot of bodies they throw at you. Guys that are playing well, see what it looks like if Young comes back out there. So
let's hear from Washington head coach now, Ron Rivera. Here he is talking about the possible return of Chase Young.
Chase looked good. He did. He had a good day. Showed us some things that we've been looking for, and we'll continue to monitor his progress, and we'll see how he does on Friday.
So what they're talking about in D.C. for Chase Young, Grant mentioned somewhere around, you know, 15 to 18 snaps per game. Ron Rivera said 12 to 16 per game to start with. Maybe by the end of the year they could get him up to 35 to 40 snaps. They've been handling him really with kid gloves. I mean, he's been back at practice for a little while now. And I said this earlier, for me, and I asked it to Grant, you know, how do they choose to use this guy? He had the reputation based off of what he did in college in his first year in the league as being a pass rusher. He's probably been as good, maybe even better against the run over the last couple of years than he has been against the pass. So how will they choose to use him and bring him into this game? And then the other thing, you know, when you get somebody that's coming back off of an injury like that, is he ready to go all out? Is he still concerned about that knee and what it may mean to him going forward? You know, would he play a little cautious there? That I think anytime you've got somebody, regardless of the position, that's coming off an injury like that, it's always a little bit of a concern. World Cup soccer going on. You got the United States and England today at 1 o'clock. Jess Charman from Atlanta Soccer Tonight that she co-hosts with Jason Longshore that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Jess was with us earlier. We talked about how important this game, this match today was for U.S. soccer. And she brought up a great point about the not only was it important for U.S. soccer currently, but the future of U.S. soccer with the World Cup coming here in 4 years would be good for the U.S. to have a good showing today against one of the historical powers in World Cup play in England. But it's happening today at 1 o'clock, and I guess they are just about ready to get things underway now. All right, NFL from yesterday, Buffalo beat Detroit 28-25. Pretty entertaining game. That's one of those we always have it on, but let's face it, you know, the Lions really haven't been worth watching the last couple of years, but I thought yesterday was a pretty fun game. Field goal in the last couple of seconds for Buffalo to win it. Let's hear from Jared Goff. This Detroit team, say what you want about them, this is a team that they're a confident group. I mean, they were writing articles in Detroit this last week talking about the playoffs for this team. And that's something that it's been a while since Detroit has had that kind of hope. Let's hear from Jared Goff.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're a confident team, and Dan kind of mentioned it in there. You know, every week's going to be a reload, though. How do we reload and come back out and play good ball? And no matter who we're playing, this league's too good. It's top to bottom so good. And but we do feel like we can compete with anybody and compete anybody. And yeah, certainly we're behind the eight ball a little bit, but plenty of games left to make some noise.
By the way, England and the United States is an hour away from starting. They'll start just after 2 o'clock. I think I might have misspoke and said 1 o'clock there, but it starts at 2 o'clock later today. So you still got nearly an hour before that one kicks off. Now, back to the Lions here for a minute and what we saw from them last year and over the course of this year. When the Falcons played the Lions earlier in the season, had a chance to visit with Lomas Brown, the former all-pro tackle for the Lions, guy that blocked for Barry Sanders, probably the best left tackle in the history of the Detroit franchise. And, you know, he just had so much to say, so many positive things and good things to say about Dan Campbell and what Dan Campbell had done, how well he was liked, not just in that locker room, but by people in the front office, people around the organization. A lot of people there pulling for Dan Campbell to be successful. And I think you hear from, you know, you listen to Jared Goff there. This is a group that they feel like they can play with just about anybody. Cowboys beat the Giants yesterday 28-20. Dallas totally shut down the Giants' run game, held the Giants to just 90 yards. Here's Daniel Jones, the Giants' quarterback, on the lack of a run game on Turkey Day.
I don't know. I think we got to, you know, watch the tape and see exactly what they did defensively, what their plan was going in. I think, you know, we'll have a better idea, but you got to give credit to them. They're a good front. They're a good defense, and they did a good job.
Elsewhere around the NFL, you had Minnesota beating New England last night, 33-26. Justin Fields, the Chicago Bears quarterback, we saw him in Mercedes-Benz Stadium last week with a separated shoulder. Let's hear from Fields.
So it's just a separated shoulder with, you know, partially torn ligaments, basically like an AC joint. So, yeah, that's my understanding of it. Yeah, it's just some movements that I do with my arm. You know, it hurts it a good bit. So, like I said, just trying to, you know, work through those motions and kind of get my arm used to moving in those particular motions that, you know, hurt it. So it's used to, you know, moving that way, and it gets the muscles stronger. So, I just feel like if I can play and, you know, that I'm not, you know, furthering the risk of injury, and I can do what I need to do to be able to protect myself, I think, you know, that'll be good enough for me to play.
He did say yesterday, you didn't hear it in that cut, but he did say yesterday that it did hurt when he goes to throw, that his throwing motion causes him pain. Look, this is what happens when you treat a guy like he's a running back. It's what happens when you let your quarterback take shots and you get him hit the way Fields has been hit. Between their shoddy offensive line and him running the ball so much, sooner or later, and look, Justin Fields, we talked about this a little bit last week on the Falcons pregame show with Harper and I, a bigger guy than what you expect, right? I mean, Justin Fields, good-sized dude. I mean, it's not like he's 195 pounds back there. You know, this guy has some size to him, and he's got great speed, and obviously he's used that. I mean, he rushed for 85 yards last week against the Falcons. Had gone for over 100 back-to-back weeks prior to that. But you can't allow a guy to get out there and run around and get hit as much as he's been able to get hit and expect him to be able to stay healthy. You just can't do it. And I hate that for Justin Fields, because I thought he was having a heck of a year. Thought he was having a really good year. We'll talk a little NBA with our friend Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks. He'll join us. We'll get into the Hawks. Let's get you caught up here on some World Cup stuff. Iran over Wales 2-0. And also Ecuador and the Netherlands, they finished in a 1-1 draw. That one just finished up. And, again, you've got the England and the United States coming up about 45 minutes from now at 2 o'clock. A lot more for us to get to. We got about 45 minutes left for us here. We'll talk a little Hawks basketball. Brad Rowland, Locked On Hawks, the podcast. He'll join us. We'll get into that next. Chris Goforth with you on this Black Friday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth in on this Friday. And as I often enjoy doing this time of the year, we head out on the WadeFord.com hotline. Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and bring in Brad Rowland from Locked On Hawks, the podcast, available on the Odyssey app and wherever you download your podcast from. Always appreciative of Brad making a little bit of time for us. Brad, am I wrong for thinking that the offense for the Hawks should be a little better right now, given the pieces they have?
No, I think you're right about that. I think, you know, maybe not the same level as last year as a top two or three offense in the entire league, but no one expected the Hawks to be below average, which is where they are right now in terms of points per possession and some of those supporting metrics. So, yeah, I think there more shots will fall. Some of the process stuff is a little bit concerning under the line, but no, I think you're not wrong at all. This is a team that should be better than this offense.
Yeah, and the perimeter game hasn't been there at all early in the year. It's not that they're not making many threes, Brad. They're not shooting many. Obviously, that part will help when they get the bogey back. But what's the story with the perimeter game and the outside shooting?
Yeah, it's interesting. They did lose a lot of shooting in the offseason between Kevin Huerter and Danilo Gallinari, and as you mentioned, Bogdanović still being out. So those were three of their top four or five shooters from last year that are not on this team anymore, and they were replaced by guys who are capable shooters but not quite the same level of gravity as those three. But also, you know, part of it's just guys missing shots. Guys like John Collins and Trae Young in particular are below their career averages and their recent averages. That should normalize itself, but it's also sort of an organizational and really a coaching staff emphasis. They just don't take a lot of threes. This is a team that probably has better personnel to be shooting more threes than they have been so far. They take a lot of mid-range shots, both Trey and DeJounte and other guys that kind of like that mid-range quite a bit. So I think they will take more as the season goes along, but I expect this team now to probably be below average in how much they take. And making them is a little bit more comes down to luck sometimes, but I think it's definitely been a process shift under Nate McMillan to kind of emphasize the rim and also that mid-range area a little bit more than they did in the past.
How much better, Brad, is this team on defense this year compared to the team that the Hawks put out there last year?
They are much better, both personnel-wise and just execution-wise so far. You know, part of the trade-off they made in the offseason, adding guys like DeJounte Murray, but even their supporting pieces like your Justin Holiday types, Aaron Holiday especially, those guys are defense-first players, and I think they got better defensively on paper, losing Gallinari in particular. Gallo has a lot of offensive strengths, not really on defense necessarily. And then they're also just playing better defense. It's more of a grinded-out style. It's not always the most fun to watch because in the last couple of years they've been this high-flying offensive team, and now they're more content and I think really more in the image of their head coach to kind of be more of a grinding team that plays better defense. The captain of that, Clint Capela. Capela has been playing incredibly well defensively this year, but he's not alone. I think John Collins is having his best defensive season of his career so far. Murray's a good defender. Trey is always going to be a weakness, but he certainly has been better in the last year or two on that end of the floor. So it's more definitely a team effort, but I think the Hawks are kind of playing a different style, and they're also just leaning on Capela, who has been fantastic, and having a Conley behind them too. They have 48 minutes of really quality center play on defense, and that is a huge factor.
Brad Rowland, Locked On Hawks. Brad, I was going to ask how much of this emphasis on defense and this style of play, how much of that you think is coming from Nate McMillan, but you believe this is kind of in his image here, huh?
Yeah, I think Nate has always been more of a defense-first coach, and that actually got that became kind of a joke, kind of a meme last year because the Hawks were so bad defensively coached by Nate McMillan, but it was definitely driving him crazy. You can tell that he is, when he was a player, 20, 30 years ago now, he was certainly renowned for his defense and kind of builds his teams in that image. And I do think that, you know, aside from Trey, who definitely has a target on his back most of the time, they don't have a lot of weaknesses defensively. They have guys who at least can hold up a little bit better. You know, they don't have Gallo to attack. Bogdanović, while he'll help the offense, might hurt the defense when he comes back as well. There's sort of a trade-off there. But I think having a lot of quality front court play is the biggest thing. Capela, Conley, Collins, that trio has been awesome defensively this year. And Nate really seems to like to grind it out on the defensive end of the floor more often than his predecessor did. So they're definitely sacrificing some offense for some defense in the way that they're kind of deploying lineups, the way they're kind of playing overall, playing a little bit slower. But I think that the Hawks definitely have had success with it so far. And I think as long as they hold up and be a top 12 or so defensive team where they've been so far, that is just light years away from where they were last year when they were in the bottom five most of the season.
Brad Rowland, check out his podcast, Locked On Hawks. You get it every single day. covering the Hawks, and you can find it on the free Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast from. Just search Locked on Hawks, and you'll find it. Brad hanging with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Was it strange seeing Kevin Huerter in a different uniform when the Kings came to town a couple of nights ago?
It was a little bit. I think even the team kind of acknowledged that too. You know, he was talking about all of his old teammates before the game on the court, you know, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter, guys he played with his entire career. And, you know, he was drafted here and spent his first four years in Atlanta. Nate McMillan got asked about him before the game and said he's one of his favorite guys that he's coached and just really talked him up in a big way. And I'm sure it was weird for him coming back home, at least not necessarily his permanent home, but a place where he spent 4+ years of his career. And it's always a little bit strange, especially for guys who were drafted by the Hawks, to come back for that first time. He's been playing great, though. They were all very happy for him and the way they were talking about that. The Kings have been pretty good this year. He's having his best year of his career. So definitely a lot of positivity around that. The Hawks definitely miss him, I think, in some ways on offense, in particular with his shooting. But I think it's nice to see him thriving. And by all accounts, Kevin's always been a guy who's been kind of beloved behind the scenes.
What's the latest on Bogey? When do we see him back on the floor and kind of integrated into this offense?
It's a great question. The Hawks have been kind of going out of their way to not give it a lot of specifics on his timeline in particular, but he has been doing a little bit more. There was some video circulated from the back half of practice on Sunday of last week about him playing some 3-on-3. He's been playing some more 1-on-1, 2-on-2 kind of things. So he's ramping up a little bit. That's kind of the party lines that he's been doing a little bit more each day. He has not yet played 5-on-5 and gone, you know, live is the way that Nate McMillan refers to it all the time, like really kind of giving it 100% effort at a 5-on-5 setting. That's the next step for him. Once that happens, he should be only a week or two away, but that's kind of the last big hurdle to clear, is getting back to practice, being able to actually be fully integrated in that. I think, you know, now that we're at Thanksgiving or beyond, something like, you know, mid to late December would be my, like, uneducated guess, kind of between the lines, but there's been nothing official on that. So I think they're definitely taking it easy on him, maybe on purpose, because the last 2 years he was breaking down by the end of the season. There is an advantage to having him be healthier for longer if you are the Hawks, but they also badly need him. So we'll see how long it takes to make it back in the court.
How will they work him into this offense?
I think the biggest thing is just he provides more shooting. You know, they've been playing AJ Griffin a lot more recently, and that makes a lot of sense as a guy who's a really dynamic offensive player. But he's 19 years old, and I think Bogey, aside from Trae Young and maybe Griffin, is by far their best shooter. And just having another guy on the floor who can and will take threes, who can and will put pressure on the defense, and just expand the defense. Because really, you even see it when Griffin's out there compared to other guys. They have to be guarded differently. And that's half the battle in the NBA, is just being able to kind of change the gravity of the court, being able to be guarded out to 28 feet, 30 feet like Bogey can be. We've seen him at his best be a dynamic offensive player. You know, famously in the second half of the season 2 years ago, he shot 50% from three for like a 40-game sample size. He was just fantastic. So I think that keeping him out there on the floor defensively might hurt them a little bit compared to other guys, but I think offensively he is a hugely positive option for them, and that should help boost a lot of different things on offense.
So this team has kind of been stuck in that win one, lose one kind of streak here for almost a month now. I think you'd have to go back to November 5th and November 7th to find the last time they were able to win back-to-back games. How important is it? Look, you've got a team in Houston tonight. They should be able to overwhelm. But how important is it for this team to kind of string a couple of wins together right now?
Yeah, I'm sure it would be nice for them just morale-wise and just the way that it all goes. Nobody likes to lose, and they've been losing, you know, every 3 days or so basically for the last 3 or 4 weeks, like you just laid out. And, yeah, this is their easiest spot on paper in a while to get a second straight win. Houston is not very good. But even then, you have to go to Houston on the day after a holiday. It might be a little bit of a hangover there. And then the Rockets have actually had 4 days off, so they'll be very fresh. So that'll be interesting to see if they can kind of take care of business on the road in this spot, because Houston is a team that, like you said, they absolutely should beat. But I think just generally consistency has been something they've been trying to find on offense in particular. I will say the schedule has been pretty difficult. They had 5 games in a row at the beginning of the season that were very easy on paper. And ever since then, they've basically played a good team every other night. So it's one of those situations where there have been no games on the schedule, and nothing is assured in the NBA. Even tonight against Houston, like, you're favored, yes, but it's on the road, and nothing is easy in the league. But sure, I think just having a little bit of a softer schedule, you know, Sunday is also not a bad matchup against Miami, a team that they lost in the playoffs, but they've been struggling a little bit so far. That's a home game on Sunday. So maybe they can rack a couple wins here and get it going a little bit, because while they're 11-7, I'm sure they'd like to be 13-5 or something like that.
Talking Hawks with Brad Rowland from Locked on Hawks. All right, Brad, I thought we could maybe get to January before I had to ask this question, but here we go. More John Collins trade rumors. This from The Athletic. Possible deal with the Suns. Is this the year we see a John Collins trade?
Yeah, it's interesting, Chris. I mean, we feel like we've done this before a few different times on this particular airwaves. But, yeah, it's really wild. It seems to never go away. And what I would say about this particular iteration is that I don't think much is new here. I think what really happened is that Collins never kind of left the trade market. Obviously, there's sort of a dead period in the NBA from, like, August through November, December, where trades just don't really happen. Barring something that's pretty crazy, like a team, you know, somebody asking out or something like that, it's kind of a dead area for trades. But I think Collins has just been available this entire time. And on the other side, you know, the Hawks have been asking for a full price for him, and that's why they haven't traded him yet. They're not going to give him away. While he has been available, they've been asking for a fair return, and they haven't gotten it yet in their mind. So we'll see if that changes. I think that it might reach a critical mass this time around. It is starting so early. You know, I think that if I had to guess between now and February, will he be traded? I probably would say yes at this point, but it's not like it's 90% either. I think it's always been in that, you know, 40 to 60% range, depending on the day. And I think he's been available, but the Hawks are not, at least to this point, been willing to lower their asking price. And until they do that, there isn't a whole lot of urgency. And part of the thing is, as you might imagine, the Hawks want to win. And I think if you're going to trade John Collins, you have to replace him with someone you can play at the power forward spot, because he is by far their best power forward, and that definitely adds a different dynamic to this.
Brad Rowland, talking Hawks with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we finish up. Brad, let's part on this. Give me your thoughts, and again, it's early. We're 18 games, give or take, 17, 18 games into this thing. Give me your thoughts on what you've seen so far from the East. Boston off to a really good start. The Hawks were able to handle Milwaukee. I'm a little surprised at what Cleveland has done and kind of the way they've played up till this point. Give me your thoughts on the East and what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that Boston and Milwaukee have kind of separated themselves a little bit. I know the Hawks beat the Bucks twice, but the Bucks without Chris Middleton so far have still been able to play really, really well. And Boston's playing extremely well after making the finals last year. If I had to guess, I would say those two teams are kind of in a tier by themselves at the top. And then there's kind of a pretty wide next tier that I think includes the Hawks. You have the Hawks, you have the Cavs, you have, you know, teams like Philadelphia, who's been up and down, but they've had some injury issues. They've been sort of a proven team in the last couple of years. Toronto is always in the mix there around that spot. There's probably 4, 5, 6 teams that could be realistically the 3 seed in the East this year. I think the Hawks could be in that range as well. But I have I would say more trust in Milwaukee and Boston than the rest. But it's really jumbled. The entire league right now is really jumbled. There's a lot of teams that have 6, 7, 8 losses, and they're kind of clumped together. It makes for interesting times, because a lot of times the NBA is criticized for being, you know, top heavy. This year, it's not really been that. It's been a lot of parity, and that could be a lot of fun too.
Brad, appreciate it as always, man. Great stuff. And again, want to encourage folks, Locked On Hawks, that's the podcast. You can find it wherever you download your podcast from. You can get it right on your phone each and every day through the free Odyssey app. And Brad, appreciate it as always. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
That's Brad Rowland. Check him out again, his podcast, Locked On Hawks. We'll come back. We're going to wrap it up, going off the rails. Look, I know it's not it's Thanksgiving, and it's not the 4th of July. We'll talk about the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Tell you, the sports in the U.S. that are gaining popularity right now. And Charles Barkley saying he and Michael Jordan no longer speak. We'll get to those stories. We'll wrap it up here. Chris Goforth on this Black Friday. In for Andy and Randy. Guys, back with you on Monday. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth in on this Black Friday. Time for us to go off the rails the way we ended here. We'll touch on a couple of things that, we pretty much wouldn't otherwise ever get around to doing. Do want to take a minute, though. Thanks to our guest, everybody that joined us today. Thanks to Jess for hopping on, talking a little soccer with us. Thanks to Brad Rowland, of course, for talking Hawks. Bill Bender joined us to talk college football today. So appreciate everybody that could take part today. Thanks to Garrett for coming in and working on what would normally be an off day for him. He's back in again tomorrow. We got college football game time tomorrow morning starting at 8. We'll go until 11:30, and then we got college football here tomorrow. Right, Garrett?
Yeah, that's the plan. Right here, college football game time, 8 till noon.
No, we got a game tomorrow, though.
We're
done at 11:30 tomorrow.
Yeah, we've had there is the game.
It's the game, yeah.
The game.
Ohio State, Michigan. You'll be able to hear it right here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Don't forget Hawks basketball tonight, 7:30 pregame, 8 o'clock tip. So there you go. College football game time tomorrow morning. Make plans to come hang out with John Chuckery, Randy McMichael, and myself. So, look, it's not the 4th of July, but a little bit of news about Nathan's hot dog eating contest. You and I somehow always end up together, Garrett, on July 4th. I am not a competitive eating person. I don't typically watch it, but ESPN has reached a new deal with the International Federation of Competitive Eating that they will continue to broadcast the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest through the year 2029.
Good for them.
It's not going away.
Good for them. I don't know. It's not something that's – I'm not their audience. Let's just put it that way. I'm not exactly the person that they're going for.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who they're going for with that.
People in New Jersey, probably.
I don't know.
Staten Island, isn't it? Staten Island?
I think so.
Yeah. It's not for me. I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of people shoving hot dogs down their gullet, necessarily. It's not for me, but it's fine because somebody out there likes it. I don't know who it is. I haven't really met that person. I've seen them on social media for some reason. Very interesting. Some people think that they're like these guys are some of the best athletes in the world or whatever. And I'm like, Joey Chestnut? No, sorry. Mm-mm. No, I'm not putting him on that level with Michael Phelps.
Is eating an athletic event? Listen, if it is, I am all pro after yesterday. Let me just say. If eating is an athletic event.
Save me a spot.
I need to be getting paid for this. That's what I want. All right. Speaking of athletes now, the Chive, which I always find something interesting on thechive.com, they have got the list of the sports that are gaining in popularity in the U.S. Tell me if you have any interest in any of these, Garrett. Pickleball. Pickleball has experienced 39.9% growth since the start of the pandemic. It is now the fastest growing sport in America.
Have you played pickleball?
I have not.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I feel like most people who are my age more so play that game. But I guess it's actually picking up a lot of popularity.
No, it's gotten – isn't there pickleball leagues now?
Yeah.
Like Tom Brady and other people have invested in pickleball leagues?
The highlights that I have seen from people playing like pickleball it's very impressive, I have to say. It's pretty impressive.
Another sport that's growing, softball. Interesting. Softball has grown 14.8% year over, and roughly, get a load of this, 75% of the players now, of the new people that have come to the sport, are over the age of 55.
How about that? Interesting. I've never been a big softball guy myself. I know here at the station, Knox Bardeen, his daughter's very good at softball.
Knox's daughter. I enjoy the Women's College World Series. It's my unpopular take of the day, but I enjoy it more than
unpopular.
I do the men's College World Series. The thing about softball is, at the collegiate level, it moves so quickly.
Those games are fast.
Everything happens so quick. I enjoy watching it. I watch the women's College World Series every year. Enjoy it.
Who won last year? Was that Florida who won last year?
Yeah. Now you're asking me, and I can't remember. It wasn't
Florida
SEC
and
team,
Oklahoma and Alabama's really good. Like they've got a bunch of very talented teams, and those and the, I think you had a point. those games do move quickly.
Yeah. No, seriously, you got 2 hours. It's a fun way if you have daughters. Certainly, it's something great to be able to get them in. I played about 3 or 4 years in my 20s of church league softball.
Ew.
And I had a blast.
I mean,
playing.
It's fun.
It was fun.
I did intramural softball a lot when I was in college.
Right.
Just with the fraternity guys and everything else. But we had a great time. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, any intramural sports like that.
How about golf? 25.1 million people played golf on a course in 2021. That's 8% of the population.
Hmm. How about that? How many of those can actually hit the ball straight, though? That's the question.
Way less than 8%.
3%, probably.
That.
Half of them. No, I enjoy golf. I'm unfortunately one of the ones who cannot consistently keep the ball on the fairway. But, you know, I was actually up in Lexington, Kentucky, and I played a round of golf, and it was the most difficult round of golf I've ever played. They have grass in that city that I have never seen before.
It's the bluegrass state.
Oh, my gosh. The rough up there is, I would hit my golf ball into the rough and I'd lose it. It would be like 2 feet off of the fairway and you couldn't find it anymore. It's gone. It was the thickest grass I've ever seen. It almost made me quit. I thought I had been playing really well this year, and then I hit it up there and I haven't played since.
Here's the thing about golf with me. When I was in college, I actually have a PE credit in golf. And started playing around that time and played first couple of years out of college. And then I found out that golf is one of those, if you want to be good at it, and in order for me to enjoy it, I would have to be good at it. And in order to do that, you have to be able to play and do it consistently, and I just can't.
It's all about repetition.
Yeah, 100%.
You need the reps. And I too have a golf credit from college. I did the same thing, and that was the best I've ever gotten at playing golf.
Oh yeah, because you played consistently, and you were getting consistent feedback from an instructor, right?
Yeah, so right. I got better, and then I foolishly thought that was just going to continue, but
no,
you
didn't
know,
happen.
Yeah, I did get better when I played consistently, and I've been better ever since. But I mean, golf is fun. It also, I've never seen a sport that makes people want to quit as badly as golf does.
Oh yeah,
it is such a difficult sport, and it is the most unforgiving of all the sports that I've ever played.
That's a good way to describe it. Unforgiving, unforgiving. Tennis is up as we talk about the sports that are gaining popularity in the U.S. You can find this by going over to thechive.com. Tennis has seen a 27.9% growth in participation, adding almost 5 million players from its ranks. My wife enjoys tennis. I not so much. She was actually in a tennis club and played club competition there for a while. Enjoy watching her play. Not my thing. Skiing and snowboarding. 14.94 million skiers, 7.56 million snowboarders in America. And I would think a lot of that, though, like, how many people do that once when you go on vacation every now and then when you go to, you know, somewhere in Utah or, you know, wherever you go to go skiing? You go somewhere in the mountains and go skiing. I don't know how many people actually would consider themselves an avid, certainly in this part of the country, would consider themselves avid skiers, right? It's something you do on vacation. Surfing, something I've always wanted to try but never have. 24 million surfboards are sold annually worldwide. There are more surfers in the U.S. than anywhere else, 2.8 million. Never done it. Would love to. Other sports that are growing, volleyball, what they call court volleyball, which is basically indoor volleyball to us, growing. Another one of those, another college sport that women's volleyball at the collegiate level, fantastic. Soccer, no surprise there. Participation in high school soccer grew 32% from 2002 to 2019. Beat out baseball, hockey, basketball, and football by more than 25%. So that is a look at the sports that are growing the fastest. Real quick, Charles Barkley, talking to People magazine, said that he hasn't spoken to Michael Jordan in almost 10 years. He said, I think probably me and Michael were best friends. That's probably the most prominent thing. He said that it was, what was it he said? The toughest thing about Michael, he's got to put better people around him, because the toughest thing when you're famous, you're on private jets, you're buying all the drinks, you're buying all the dinners. Very few people are going to be honest with you. And I try to surround myself with people like, hey, if I'm screwing up, please tell me. Says Michael got offended about something that he said about him 10 years ago, and the two haven't spoken. It's going to wrap it up for us. Mark Zeno coming your way next to continue your Black Friday. Hope you're having a great day. Be safe if you're going to be out and about today. I'll see you back in here tomorrow morning. College football game time tomorrow, kicking off at 8 a.m. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.